it's basically like Nichijou session blah blah blah, and then it's like something happens that's completely random. To the song Sweet Drops from the anime Usagi Drop by the artist Puffy. This is the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, episode 99.
Ooh.
So
my
close.
Heart just did a little stutter.
I know.
So close.
This much more. And if you have a suggestion for our 100th episode, we have a topic for that on the forums. But as always, our sole mission is to
make what? You more addicted to anime.
Yep, you got it.
Indeed.
That's it.
Never changing. You can find us at aaapodcast.com, iTunes, drop us a rating, helps us out, Facebook, which is facebook.com/AnimeAddictsAnonymousPodcast, the aaanetwork.org, great place to find new shows, and ustream.tv/channel/anime-addicts-anonymous-podcast. Whew.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful.
For a girl wearing a pedo bear suit.
It's not pedo
bear. Just kidding, it's the Dakuma. Inakuma is the only plushie that does not get burned in the Church of Mitsugi.
Oh, thank you, Mitsugi. You're too kind. So we have some new forum members this week. We have Push-Up Girl, Morbid Trioxin, which I guess is kind of like Morbid Toxin, Patalite, Makeo.
Nice try. We'll go with that.
Daisy Duke, TK, underscore TK, and Krishawano. And as far as my name of the week, I think I'm gonna have to say Push-Up Girl.
You ho.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, I'll leave it.
Pick a different one.
I'll pick a different one.
You don't even
one.
Do push-ups.
I did. When I was doing P90X, I did.
You're a wannabe push-upper.
I'm not a wannabe push-upper. You're not a wannabe push-upper.
not even close.
I'll take Morbid Trioxin as my name of the week.
All right, I'm going with Push-Up Girl because you are awesome. And we should do push-ups. and stuff.
I have no idea.
You have no idea?
I have no idea.
Himiko abstains.
Our new trivia for this month, I'm calling it my Rule of Threes trivia.
Oh, so fancy.
I know.
So
I
fancy.
I like it.
And basically, the way it works is I'm showing three pictures, and you have to say what those three different series have in common. And this week, the three pictures were of Spice and Wolf, Wolf's Reign, and Jinro the Wolf Brigade. And if that doesn't give it away, you might be special.
So is this like your easy one? Are they going to get harder?
They will probably get a little bit harder. But of course, the connection between them is they all have wolf or wolves in the title. And people who got that correct were the Black Tiger, Canada Man, Robert the Crimson, Khaki Blue Sox, Yupa, Typhoon, of course, Z Comics, Mallow Martian, and Nozaku.
You know, we always say, of course, for Typhoon, but Robert the Crimson gets just as many of these right.
Yeah, Z Comics also gets a lot of them right, too, now, I've been noticing, but...
Who won? Who's the winner for the week?
The winner for the week is Yupa!
You rock, man.
You won again.
Yay! And the winner from last month was Apocalypse369.
1 week late announcing that, but you'll live with it.
Yeah, well, you still get a free prize, even though we're a week late. So, yay for you! And the new trivia is up, as of right now. So go check it out, and good luck, everyone. Birthdays!
Way ahead of you.
Are you? Yep. You already got that all set up?
I sure do.
Happy birthday to J-U-G-G.
Jug.
Oh man, you do that too well, Mitsuki.
Jugs. Here is your On a Clear Day from Kiki's Delivery Service by Joe Hisaishi.
Happy birthday to you.
Wow, Mitsuki, that was fantastic.
Lovely addition, just lovely.
Bringing it down.
A little softer.
Okay, it's done.
Okay.
All right, now you can keep going.
We have some things for our almighty anime mailbag.
It is almighty.
Or the AA mailbag. As always, if you want to submit questions to the AA podcast for our mailbag for us to discuss on the show, we have a section that says mailbag in the pink bar on our website, and you just click that. It's really easy. It's a magical click.
Try not to submit questions that are too stupid, because in that case, we just laugh at them and then don't actually answer them.
That's what Mitsuki does.
Unless you're really witty, answer them all.
Yeah.
If you're really witty and really good about it, make us entertained enough.
Well, actually, I might actually enjoy embarrassing you on air, but I think the only way we wouldn't answer is if it was something we had recently talked about on the podcast.
Yeah.
For example, someone asked what the pros and cons were of doing anime cons or something. I think we've done that in like 4 different episodes. So.
We really have, haven't we?
So.
Anyway,
we're on with it.
Our first question tonight comes from What's His Name. Literally, What's His Name? That's his name. At what age is it okay to watch anime? Or at what point of your life, I assume, do you have to let go of anime? Is it when you have a family or when you're 40? Or is it something that can last forever? Thanks for the help.
Let go of anime. Pshaw.
Isn't that sort of a personal choice?
I would say so.
I mean, I think it has to do with...
It can be influenced.
With your personal beliefs, your personality, and how much time you have on your hands.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you ever have to let go of anime. I think, as we've mentioned before, as you get older, your tastes will probably become more and more refined and likely more and more selective. Yes, or grumpy. You could go the way of Mitsuki.
But I mean, like, I'll probably watch Torture with my kids. Have I not let go of anime yet? If I watched Torture with my kids? I don't know. But pretty much every Ghibli movie, except for Princess Mononoke, is suitable for kids. And maybe Nausicaa.
No.
Other than that, no. You're good.
Yeah.
You're good to go.
Cat Returns is the best.
I love that.
But,
voiced by Kira.
And we will be reviewing a Ghibli film later.
Whee!
Yay!
New and improved.
As in about 1 hour or something like that.
Something like that.
Depending on how long this random hodgepodge of podcast is.
I don't know. I don't think you ever have to let go of anime. I agree with Mitsuki. It's a personal choice, and if you want to watch it, then you watch it. Don't let the man get you down. Oh,
as I said before, Daryl from Anime World Order seems to think that the expiration date is 30, but...
Incorrect.
I don't know. I mean...
Incorrect.
You know, unless you're a 30-year-old watching, like, the Moe stuff, then you're a little bit strange.
Yeah.
But there's enough mature anime out there that a 30-year-old can probably watch something and, you know...
Yeah, I would say you probably should stay away from at least watching certain types in public.
Like Okubo? Because if your friends see you watching Lolicon basketball, they're going to think you're sick.
Magical Girl series.
They spend half of that show in swimsuits, and they're like 8. And it's really upsetting.
Yeah. So, okay, next question. Our next question is from Folium, who's in the chat. Hello again, guys and gals. It is I, he who presides over sausage as knighted by Roko. I would like to ask about Chiaki and Kimiko's thoughts on cosplay in anime, seeing as they cosplay themselves. Do they present it in a good way or a bad way, and how does it hold up to real-life cosplay?
I wish I had some, like, Knights of the Round Table music in here.
I know.
We're Knights of the Round Table. We dance whenever able.
Yeah, actually, speaking of that, You guys can keep going, please.
Okay. I'm trying to think of the times where I've seen cosplay in anime.
Folium has been knighted, so I am playing Knights of the Round Table. Just a fable.
Nice.
Keep going, though. Enjoy while you talk.
The only ones that are coming to mind from, or the only one really, is Comic Party. Mm-hmm. And that was based around conventions and stuff, wasn't it? So, like, if it's just kind of, if it happens occasionally, sometimes it can come off as being a little bit like, why? Like, Renge and Ouran is always just kind of like, I'm a random person in cosplay. But even the characters go, wow, otaku. You know?
Yeah. Like, I feel like cosplay is more mentioned in anime. Like when anime characters talk about being anime fans. When the anime characters talk about being anime fans and they're like, but I'm not like someone who's gonna dress up in cosplay, or like they joke about something, like the characters will be at a store and they'll be like, oh my god, that looks like a cosplay, which does happen in real life.
I don't think it's ever really done in a completely negative light, though, I've noticed.
I don't think so either.
Like, not 100%. I mean, it can be joked about, but it's never like, oh. Yeah.
What are you guys talking about? I was totally just dancing.
It's okay.
I don't even know.
MDL Track does make a good point. Otaku no Video does have cosplay, and a lot of it. I haven't seen that myself, so I was kind of avoiding commenting on it, but
Otaku
I know it does
no
have...
Video?
Yeah. And I know that's, like, about otaku, so...
Where is that in the question?
It's okay, Mitsugi. Just keep dancing. It's cool.
There is a lot of cosplay in Otaku no Video, but it's just because... They all become, they're all otakus, and they drag like the businessman into the otaku dumb, and he ends up cosplaying and whatever else, you know.
Yeah.
Model creating and shit like that, and his life falls apart.
But I wouldn't.
It's true. It's what happens.
The only thing that I would say is whenever they talked about cosplay in series, I feel like they make it sound really easy.
Maybe it's just
the Japanese who they're like, I'm Japanese, and if I do something, I'm going to do it perfectly unless it kills me, or even if it does kill me. So.
And for some reason, I look way better in my cosplay than everybody else because I'm Japanese.
Asian. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. I guess that wasn't a very good answer.
Why is it that like any random Japanese girl Riku looks better than pretty much any Western Japanese girl Riku?
Because they're this big.
And because they're Asian.
Yeah, that's true. It does help having, like, super thin bones and...
Yeah.
When your waistline's 23 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does help.
So, tonight...
Agenda! I need to have a soundbite that just goes, Agenda!
Agenda! The cat is sleeping with his mouth open right now, and it just made me giggle.
I've been looking at him for, like, the last 10 minutes.
Cornelius is sleeping directly next to the table where we record.
I feel like I want to just turn the camera on him, but I feel like you'll yell at me because it'll make noise or something.
If I feel inclined, I'll do it.
Okay. So tonight we are talking about art progression in anime and famous artists and stuff like that. And then we are also going to talk about do some reviews on Nichijo and Karigurashi no Arieti, or The Borrower Arieti.
Good lord. Karigurashi no Arieti.
I'm sorry.
I did put the camera on Cornelius for a moment, but of course he woke up, so
yeah,
that ruins it.
It wasn't nearly as exciting. It wasn't. So, yes. Art progression, anime, and famous artists.
I could probably put my camera on the cat because nobody really cares about me.
Aww,
so, I mean,
that's not true, Mitsugi.
People would much rather see two girls and a cat than two girls and two girls and a Mitsugi, and Cornelius agrees. Anyway.
He's looking very stoic right now.
Oh, Mokuren and Mentos care.
See?
That's fine. Okay.
Oh, well, and Folium doesn't, actually.
Folium doesn't care. That's cool.
Okay, so... artists that made an impact. Obviously, art is a big deal in animation because art is animation. No one would argue that Japanese anime has made, like, its own style for itself. Any Westerner, even if they know nothing about anime, will say, like, nails on a chalkboard to my ears. That's in that Japanime style.
Japanimation.
Japanimation.
I don't know why they have a southern accent,
but they do.
I always just assume, and I'm from West Virginia, but I always just assume that people that are redneck always have a southern accent for some reason.
Well, that's I'm not gonna.
But I'm from I'm from the redneck heartland.
I'm from Texas,
where we have more trailers and actual houses than West Virginia.
Oh.
West Virginia is much worse than Texas.
It depends on which part of Texas.
We didn't even get our first Starbucks until like 4 years ago. So
actually, it's true. They got an Olive Garden, and that was, like, the nice
that's like
restaurant
that Olive Garden is, like, the shit my town. That's, like, where you go. That's where you go to celebrate.
On, like, a hot date.
Granny survived one more year? Red Lobster. Red Lobster.
Well, they do have really great king crab.
Oh, my God. Futanari K, thanks, you're a perv. Virginia, where cousins are good for practice. Moving on!
Not Virginia, West Virginia. And what is with people, if I may for a minute, that don't understand that West Virginia is a separate state than Virginia? To say, yeah, I'm from West Virginia. And they just assume...
You're from the west part of Virginia.
I'm from the west part of Virginia. This is not the west part of Virginia, which is exceedingly less redneck than actual West Virginia. But the actual state of West Virginia.
I mean, that whole Civil War thing happened, line of succession.
We were a border state, and where the tornadoes have lunch on trailer parks. Trailer parks are tornado food.
Is Tornado Alley there in West Virginia?
No,
that should be like Kansas.
The tornado touches, it's very mountainous. The tornado will touch down, wipe out a trailer park, and leave. That's all it does.
So you're the snack, basically.
I did not grow up in a trailer.
No, not you, but like West Virginia,
is
the snack.
Is where God feeds his tornadoes.
So speaking of Miyazaki.
Continuing.
Hey. The first one that I have on my list to talk about is this guy right here. The man himself, Mr. Osamu Tezuka. And you might go... Chiaki, why are you talking about Osamu Tezuka? And if you are saying that, go ahead and shoot yourself in the foot.
They're in the head.
Or in the head, because you're... No, it's okay.
Pull out your evoker and shoot yourself in the head with it.
But the reason why I bring up Osamu Tezuka specifically when talking about art and animation, aside from the fact that he's, like, the father of anime, is the fact that right here...
He's your father.
He is your father, just like Darth Vader. This right here, the eye. The eye is basically what Osamu Tezuka gave to anime. Because, let's face it, how often have you been talking to someone and they go, why did them Japanime characters have damn big eyes?
Did we just go in a circle?
Full circle, Mitsuki, full circle. But you know what I'm talking about? The people who are like, their eyes are like half the size of their head. Why?
Yep.
Yeah.
I always just assumed it was because Asian people want bigger eyes.
Many people assume that.
I actually don't really think that Asian people have smaller eyes, in general. My observation, I don't know.
I don't know. But the reason being is because Tezuka, when he was drawing, was heavily influenced by Disney. Specifically Mickey Mouse and Betty Boop. And a bunch of other Western cartoons. And he saw that they were using bigger eyes and the expressiveness that the bigger eyes had in cartoons. Because obviously, when you're animating something, unless you have the budget from God, you can't animate all the subtle features of a person's face that are normally very expressive. You have two main things on an anime character. Well, three. The eyebrows, the eyes, and the mouth. And, of course, he was seeing that the eyes played a big part in the expressiveness, so they were being influenced, and so he started the trend of the big eyes.
Hmm.
And it evolved from there.
So it's Disney's fault.
It is Disney's fault. So if someone goes, why in anime do they have big eyes? You can go, well, because in Western cartoons they have big eyes.
Hmm.
Problem solved.
And you're ignorant for not knowing that.
And,
I am.
People are
not
saying...
Not you. the person from the trailer park down my street.
Right.
And
right.
people are mentioning nose in the chat, and I just want to ask, how is the nose expressive?
Oh, no, I'll give you an example.
Okay. But, like, that's...
Oh, basically, I crinkled my nose.
Yeah.
You know, that, like, oh, something smells funny sort of look.
But even then, they don't normally show the nose crinkles.
All right, what about, like, the angry... I've seen the angry one, where it's, like, the...
Oh, yeah, the nose
twitch.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, one side of the nose goes up.
And it's like,
but then but even usually then it's associated with the eye, too. So
yeah. Okay. So the next person I have on my list is one of my personal favorites, and that is Yoshitaka Amano. And this might be very hard to see, so I will open
it. I fit very nicely on the screen, actually.
Oh, did it?
If yeah. If you would like, I can remove my picture-in-picture for a moment.
Oh, well, that'll work. And this book right here is a book that Yoshitaka Amano did, and it's actually illustrations to Mozart's The Magic Flute. And I'm trying to get it in the right area. But basically, this book is just illustrations illustrating the...
Wow, The Magic Flute. Do you want me to play music for that, too?
Yeah, you can if you want. And Yoshitaka Amano is a very, very famous artist in both video games and anime. And you'll probably hear, as I'm talking about this, a lot of overlap from video games and anime because the mediums oftentimes do just that, overlap.
Man, you're playing opera over here.
Yeah.
This is like, this is the most
classy show. But Yoshitaka Amano worked with Mamoru Oshii on Angel's Egg. He also did Vampire Hunter D, and he did work on Ayakashi Horror Tales series. But he is perhaps most well known for his work on the Final Fantasy series, where he was the concept artist. And Yoshitaka Amano was actually the first concept artist ever. He was the person they created the position for. And he was kind of explaining his work with Square Enix and whatnot and how that came about. And he was like, basically what they would do is they would take a random animator, pull them aside, put them in a small room with some paper, some their pens and pencils and whatever, and a desk, and say, you need to think of these three characters for us. Design them. We'll be back whenever you're done.
They
locked the door. And they were not allowed to leave that room until they had designed the three characters the person had asked for.
And I said you ain't leaving.
Exactly. And before that, everyone was just like random animators and things like that. There wasn't one person who did it. But they pulled in Yoshitaka Amano, and he did it the first time, and they liked it. So they pulled him in again, and he produced again, consistently, quickly, and at a quality they liked. And so they created the position of character concept just for him.
Can I just say how awesome the Queen of the Night aria is from the Die Zauberflute?
Is it?
It is awesome. Oh, that's all.
Oh, okay.
It's a good sidebar.
Yeah,
it's a good sidebar.
So,
Well, you said that picture was from Magic Flute, so...
The Zauberflute.
Right.
So, he uses a lot of ink and paint, and a less traditional anime style, and more of what I think could be argued is slightly more of a fine art style. You don't see as many of the traditional anime-esque, things that you would normally expect, like the spiky hair and the big eyes and whatnot.
Mm.
One animation style that he also worked on, which many are unfamiliar with, is an animation style known as Ganime. And for this, I will use some flashcards. Ganime is spelt like this, and...
Not all fitting. Kind of scroll it?
Other way, okay.
Keep going. There you go.
All right. So, Ganime is perfect. Spelled with the character ga and then nime, same as anime in katakana. And the character ga means to paint. So it literally means painting animation. And what Ganime is it's a very kind of expressive
and... Is that like manime?
Not at all.
That manime show.
But it's a very expressive and very experimental style. And I have another flashcard to illustrate it. Woohoo! I really got creative with the episode tonight, if you can't tell.
We're all very proud of her.
It is about art.
Yeah. So...
I don't think there's any way that people can read that.
It's okay. I'm going to explain it. So you have, basically, for people not watching the video, you have kind of a corner shape, half of a box, like an upside-down L or something. And on one point, you have extreme selective animation. And what this means is very little on the screen is moving. And then on the other end of that, you have total animation, where everything on the screen is moving. Then on the vertical scale, you have simplicity versus complexity. And this is the general spectrum which most animation falls into. Something like Redline would fall down in this corner because everything is animated and there's a ton of stuff on the screen all at once and everything's moving.
Did you just make this up? Is this an animation matrix?
Yeah.
It's like a... Man, you should like draw some little points on it when then write Redline.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, I can't do that
for
now.
Next time,
okay.
Use your MBA.
But did
Come
you
on.
Create this concept?
No.
Okay.
This is an animation concept.
Okay, just checking.
This is basically a...
That would have been really impressive.
This is basically a scatter plot graph.
Yes,
with
basically.
With no plot
on it. Well,
yeah,
but the whole simplicity, complexity, and all of that stuff, I didn't know if like you would just put that into the formula of a splatter.
No. I'm not that smart, I apologize.
I think you're that smart.
Oh, thank you. So you have animes like Redline, which would fall here. Very complex, lots of stuff animating. Most of, say, Shinkai's work probably falls somewhere down here, somewhere in the middle of simplicity and complexity.
But still on the side of total animation.
But still on the side, maybe a little bit in the middle, because total animation is like the trees are blowing in the background as the character's talking, and their hair's blowing in the wind, and their clothes are ruffling, and, you know, they're playing with their pencil, and everything's moving at the same time.
Like Shinkai would fall under the category of total animation for some scenes.
Very close for some
scenes. Well, shit, you might as well make the y-axis on that thing money.
Yes.
I mean,
basically.
The z-axis or something like that is money. And then, of course, on the reverse side, there's extreme selective animation. And what that means is there's very little things moving. And Ganime, bringing it all back together now, what it means is it's basically an art style that developed from a lot of artists. Yoshitaka Amano played with it, too, a little bit. And it's moving painting. So oftentimes you'll see, like, a painting, and instead of having parts that are traditionally animated, it'll scroll across the screen. Or you'll have one thing in the entire scene that's moving, and everything else is still and stagnant. So it's a really interesting art style, and I know Amano is kind of known for being involved with this, so he definitely contributed.
Very nice explanation.
I liked it.
Thank you.
And if this was an MBA class, that'll be $430.
Yes.
Thank God it's not.
It's really scary if you figure out how much college education costs, like, by hour.
Yeah. I try not to think about it.
It's like $280 an hour.
I try not to think about it.
And that alone right there should be enough to not want to skip as very many classes.
But you pay for all the parties and sex and free love. Yay, capitalism!
Yay! So, speaking of creating different kind of animation styles, the next kind of person on my list of artists who made an impact is Yoshihiro Tatsumi. And Yoshihiro Tatsumi created Gekiga. And I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this before, but back in the day, manga was a pure pleasure product. And what this means is it required, like, no thought or engagement from the viewer. That's how people viewed it. And manga can almost be nearly literally translated into meaning irresponsible pictures. It's just something you read for fun. You don't expect to get anything out of it. So what Yoshihiro Tatsumi did was he created the term Gekiga, or dramatic pictures, to describe his works and distinguish them from manga, because manga was aimed at children, whereas Gekiga was aimed after adults. And it came about during Tezuka's time and flourished in the lending libraries that existed then, because, now I know I mentioned these before, but because they'd only have to print very few copies and sell them to the lending libraries, and then the lending libraries could distribute them to a bunch of people. So, the most famous work of Yoshihiro Tatsumi, in my opinion, is a very surreal and graphically violent head trip known as Abandon the Old in Tokyo.
Never heard of it, surprisingly.
it's a manga, and I've read the manga, and I've also seen the live-action movie for anyone who's interested in finding it. But it has, like, things of, like, planes crashing into the sea and, like, a person walking out of the sea, and there's, like, this boy and he has, like, this gaping wound on his arm and he just keeps scratching it and making it worse and stuff. And it's very, very odd and very head trippy, but it's very detailed and it's very graphic. Like, you'll have really adult scenes there. So Gekiga eventually died with the large serialization of, like, shonen manga and the death of these lending shops, and it kind of got reabsorbed into manga as a whole. But that being said, I still think it was very important for the progression of manga because it showed that this kind of source of entertainment could be geared toward adults in a very mature fashion. And if you can get your hands on Abandon the Old in Tokyo, I recommend it if you're in the mood for a head trip.
I feel like I should have, like, I have a quote or something witty right on the tip of my tongue, but I just can't.
Do you want a moment?
No, it's all right.
Okay.
Oh, it's an Eminem song. You can continue. I'm like a head trip to listen to, because I'm only giving you things to talk about with your friends.
You know, okay.
I could get the song for that, too, but we've had enough songs.
Gotcha. And then my last artist on my artists who have made artists.
Oh, can I guess who it is?
Go ahead.
Can I guess?
Go.
Is it Akira Toriyama?
No.
It's not?
No.
Are you going to do Akira Toriyama?
Maybe. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
The last one is, of course, Hayao Miyazaki.
The next to the last one.
Surprise! Well, my next segment is artists you may know.
Oh, really?
Okay, so this first segment is, like, artists who have really, like, made an impact on the community, and then the next section is just, like, artists you may know that could slash be titled Chiaki's people who think Chiaki make pretty things.
Who's the artist that did Akuma?
I don't know.
I don't either. Let me figure that out for you.
I know it's made by SanX or something like that. Anyways, Hayao Miyazaki. I don't think I have to explain who this guy is too much, because I'm sure all of you know who he is. But,
No, I don't know who he is. Can you please explain? Someone out there doesn't know.
He's awesome. Look him up.
Thousands of people listening. One person doesn't know who Miyazaki is.
Even after all we've talked about
him? I'm willing to bet at least one person's like, Miyazaki,
Hayao Miyazaki, co-founder of Studio Ghibli, made My Name is Totoro and Nausicaa and stuff like that. That's it in a nutshell.
And he's a fabulous segue.
All right, Google him.
Yes, and he is a fabulous segue.
Look him up on Wikipedia.
But one of the reasons why I brought him up is Miyazaki experimented with digital and CG technology in Howl's Moving Castle. And Miyazaki, I watched a special on him in Japan, while I was in Japan, and he was talking about how his pursuit was for, like, that really detailed and intricate, on my animation scale, on the complexity, but detailed and intricate, like, room that just captured so much detail that it had never been done before. And in between Howl's Moving Castle and Ponyo, he took a trip to Europe, and of course, as an artist and as a lover of the arts, he was traveling through a bunch of art museums and galleries and all kinds of things, and he came across a painting, and I wish I could remember the name of the painting, but I know it's of a lady sleeping in a garden or something like that. I want to say it was Renaissance, but it might not have been. Either way, he saw the painting, and he saw just the level of detail and perfection that, in his opinion, it had reached. And he realized what he felt that he had been striving for that a whole time, someone had already achieved it thousands of years, or hundreds of years before him. So he was like, well, that sucks. It was part of his spur to go kind of back to basics with Ponyo, or when he made Ponyo. And of course, that was made up of 170,000 individual hand-painted images. And he really wanted to go back to simplicity and saying more with less on the screen. And I think that's one of the reasons why you can see a really distinct shift in animation from everything leading up to, like, Howl's Moving Castle. You had, like, you know, Spirited Away, or Prince Mononoke, Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, and all of this have these really detailed and intricate scenes.
Especially Howl's. I'm thinking about Howl's and just...
I still think of all the Ghibli movies, I still think Spirited Away has the best detail.
Spirited Away had astounding detail. But you see he's kind of, you can see in his work, you see he was kind of working up to that level of detail. And then Ponyo, it's like back to Totoro. Basically. I'm not saying that's bad, but it reverts a lot in simplicity.
I think there is a such thing as over detail, but if you really think about it, I mean, if you think about the setting, Torchro didn't really lend itself, in my opinion, to have the same amount of detail that Spirited Away had. If you think about it, there's that scene in Spirited Away where they're, like, rolling around and all the presents up in, like, the big baby's room.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's, like, there's the food in the beginning when the parents are, like, shoving their faces and there's, like, food and plates and stuff falling, and there's just lots of lavishness inside the bathhouse, whereas in Torchro you have the woods and you have, like, an old Japanese-style traditional house, and there's just not as much... There's nothing in that house that can really be that detailed.
And that is true, but I could make the argument that if it was his self-proclaimed goal to get to that level of detail, his focus on slowly shifting his works to lavish settings that allowed him that could have been in part intentional to fulfill that goal.
I wonder how lavish his biography is going to be.
Well, I don't know. I hope it's his own. I really kind of want it to be his own. Then again, it might be really grumpy.
It's not going to be. There's no way. Think about it. Think about the Japanese culture.
Why would he ever want to write a book about himself?
The Japanese culture is too humble and, you know, not all about yourself to make a biography. He would never make his own biography. There's no chance.
But,
there should be statistics done on that, how many biographies come from certain countries.
I would bet $50 that it's not his own biography.
I'll agree.
Anybody in the chat? Just kidding. Keep going.
And one of the things I found interesting, just as another tidbit of trivia going with that, Miyazaki has said that he's not seen any of the landmark, like, digital animations from the past two decades, which include Toy Story, WALL-E, and everything like that, even though he's, you know, the god of John Lasseter.
John Lasseter.
Who's Pixar's man.
Right.
And John Lasseter wants Miyazaki bad.
Yeah. Basically. He's the one who gets his hands on all of the Ghibli movies, right?
Yeah.
That he gets Disney to voice for.
John Lasseter is like, Miyazaki was my main influence of all of my Pixar movies, and I openly ripped him off in a few scenes and cases. Love you. Can you please? There was a press conference one year at, like, I want to say it was Comic Con or something. And Miyazaki, he even said, he's like, I didn't want to come, but Lasseter kind of made me. Lasseter was like, I love you. he didn't openly say that. But Miyazaki was actually kind of like, I really didn't want to be here, and this guy made me show up.
Wow.
Because that's Miyazaki.
Way to be, Lasseter.
But, Miyazaki even is quoted as saying, I can't stand modern movies. The images are too wild and eccentric for me. And he shuns TV and most modern media and reads books instead. And his car is like an old antique.
Yep, I'm not surprised.
Whatever gets it done.
Yeah. But,
it's like Tiger Woods, don't mess with his groove, you know?
Just let it be.
Just let it be.
Sports fans out there will get that.
It's all about the final
product.
The rest
of you will just keep going.
No, I got it. I got it. Something about ladies. Good strokes. All the above.
Different strokes?
No, good strokes.
Not stroking enough. And continue.
Is it bad that I don't golf, but I wanted to get that golf ball set of all the faces of all the ladies painted on the golf balls?
There were like 16 of them.
Exactly. So you could hit what Tiger Woods was hitting.
That's cute.
He's not hitting the ball straight anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah. But, so now, my second segment is kind of like the iconic artists, of our time right now. Artists you may know just by their art style. Even if you don't know their name, if you saw a picture that they drew, you'd be like, oh, that looks like this anime. Or, oh, that looks like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So the first one is one of my personal favorites, and his art style is so distinct, and that is Range Murata. And he is most well known for doing the character concepts for Last Exile.
Sequel coming out in the fall.
Sequel is coming out in the fall, and I cannot wait. But Range Murata does this kind of very no-line yet still anime style. I don't even know what picture. Oh, good. That was a good one. Some of them are a little risque. girls have very big boobs, very big hips, and are slightly in risque poses now and then in his work. But I almost akin him to having almost like a comic book-esque proportion to his...
I was just thinking that, actually.
...woman and men, where it's like the really tiny waist, the really big boobs, and the really big hips, but not in like a... Not in like an anime way where sometimes it looks silly, but kind of like in that comic book way. But he did Last Exile. He also did work on the game Magna Carta. And he was heavily influenced by Art Deco in a lot of his pieces, which you can see if you're familiar with art stuff.
I'm not, but don't look at me. I'm a pianist. I'm not. I guess that's technically an artist, but of a different nature.
Yeah, it is an artist. But yes, he did do Magna Carta, Electric Mifune. He did all of, and you can see his work heavily in that. And then my next artist is Ayazawa, who is the most well known. Probably for Nana and Paradise Kiss. But she also did the character concepts for Princess Ai, which was a 3-piece manga about, like, Jennifer Love Hewitt or something like that. It was a very random manga. I read it and I enjoyed it.
Probably God, remind me never to read that. Jesus, Jennifer Love Hewitt.
I flipped it to not a very good page of art. But Ayazawa, she kind of has that really distinct style. I see it the most in how she does her hair.
And I'm looking at, like, a world map right now.
I know. Is it still on, like, a I keep flipping from chapter to chapter. I need to flip in the middle of the chapter. There we go. This is better. But, like, you can see it in her character designs. They're kind of, like, that tall, really thin, lanky design. The hair is done in, like, a less... Less in the spiky fashion, except for the guys who have their hair spiked because they're rock stars. But in, like, the many-piece fashion. So that is another one whom you may know who has a very distinct style. And Mitsuki, you can take the next one if you want.
What, Akira Toriyama?
Yeah.
Do you have anything to hold up for Akira Toriyama?
I don't. I'm sorry.
Well, everybody knows Akira Toriyama did Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
It's probably what he's the most famous for. But he also does a lot of video games.
Yeah.
That have anime spinoffs. He did Blue Dragon. And his art design, his art style is very, very distinctive.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are characters in the Dragon Quest games where it's literally Goku walking around.
Yeah.
Literally. And I don't know...
Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger, all the Dragon Quest games, Blue Dragon, Chrono Trigger, Blue Dragon, and Dragon Quest all have anime OVAs at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not really sure if it's a good thing that all of his characters look pretty much the same, or if that's, like, you know, an exceptionally good thing, because it's so... Let's face it, everybody likes the way the Dragon Ball characters look.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Vegeta's hot stuff.
They're simple.
Oh, yes, he is.
They're simple. You know, the hair is very spiky, and it's not, like, anything overly artistic, but everybody... It's appealing to everybody, it seems, and, you know, I think it's almost like having a brand on your characters. Just having characters in your game that look like Dragon Ball Z characters is enough to bring sales and things like that to the game because of how distinctive and recognizable the characters are. If you can buy that.
Yeah.
Everything I talk about goes back to business because that's my education. But, you know, that's probably why people keep bringing Akira Toriyama onto projects, because who doesn't want to have a character that looks exactly like Goku as the protagonist.
And there is something to be said for consistency, as you said, because they know what they're getting into. It's like they know that if they sign this guy on, they're at least going to have this threshold of quality. So it's a safe investment.
Very consistent.
Yeah. Do you want to mention the next one?
Okay. Eiichiro Oda. And for those of you who are not familiar with that name, this is the person who did One Piece.
Yay!
Which is a very specific style of animation,
yes.
If I must say so myself.
And it must be doing something right, because...
It spawned off a lot of, like, Shonen Jump, Shonen Jump is the right one, right?
Shonen manga in general, yeah.
Okay, but yeah, like, the stuff that would fit in the Shonen Jump magazine?
Yeah.
Like, that Shonen style, I'd say that he influenced that a lot.
And while he's been making stuff for it now for forever.
Yeah. And how many episodes of One Piece are there now? Like 500?
I know
we're in the 400s.
I'll figure that out for you while you're talking.
But like, I always was impressed with this guy because whereas Akira Toriyama is basically like, okay, you have 15 characters, no offense, Akira Toriyama, that have slightly different hair, slight and different colors of stuff, but are basically almost the same cookie cutter character.
Mm-hmm. Looks like there's 515 episodes of One Piece.
Oh, we hit 500.
Eiichiro Oda's characters, even though they're all in his style, they're all so different.
Incredibly.
And I just like, I couldn't imagine after 400 episodes, they're like, we want to introduce a new character. Make us one.
Have we put a sword on someone's head yet?
Have we done that? Yes. Okay. What about a cake on someone? No. I know where I'm going with this. Just tell me. Yes. Darn it. Sausage?
Sausage.
We'll go with sausage.
We'll go with sausage.
Although there is Naruko here tonight.
I know.
Aww, I'm sorry.
The next one on my list is Yoshitoshi Abe, who did Lane and Haibane Renmei. And Yoshitoshi Abe's style and Range Murata's style, I find them similar in how the character faces are done. Maybe I'm the only one who's seen that. Whereas Range Murata is more of like a very polished style, and Yoshitoshi Abe is more of like a diminutive, kind of pastel-esque style. But I see kind of similarities between them, and his artwork is very distinct. If you've seen Lane and or Haibane Renmei, you go,
I don't.
Really?
I don't know. I see like similarities in his animes with maybe a lot of the backgrounds and the animation styles in general, but I don't know.
Futanari K thanks just said something funny in the chat, and it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I want
to
say it.
Does it have to do with, does it have to do with Futanari?
No. How many Bleach characters does it take to screw in a light bulb? One. But it takes him 20 episodes to do it.
Welcome to Shonen.
Ba-dum-bum-tsh.
The light is out. Oh no, the light is out. One episode. The next episode. Where are the light bulbs? Do we have any light bulbs?
Futanari throwing zings. Zinga.
The next episode. We must go get the light bulbs. Three episodes getting to the store.
God
the
damn it. Store doesn't Do we have want it. The kind that lasts 5 years or the kind that's guaranteed for 20 years?
Do we want the eco-friendly one or not?
Alright, it's dead.
And then you have an epic battle in there at the store.
It's alright.
Okay.
It's dead.
Okay.
Moving on.
The next one I add is a video game one, but the video games were then made into anime. And that is the artist from the Persona series, which is Shigenori Soejima. And
And the crowd goes wild. Ah, Persona.
Persona.
Sequel coming out in the fall.
Yes.
Or spinoff, whatever.
Persona. But the art style is very distinct. You definitely would be able to pick it out of a bunch, of a lineup, or whatever you want to call it. He does a lot. You can tell it's done on the computer. Because he does a lot of work with gradients where it fades out toward the bottom of the face, or like changes color to like more peachy flesh color, which is definitely influenced by the computer. But very distinct style, and I like it. I told you, some of these would just be artists that Chiaki likes. Do you want to talk about the next one?
Sure.
Dang, there's a lot of art books on this table.
Chiaki happens to collect art books.
In case you were wondering,
or wanting to get her a present for no reason.
Send her some swag. Art books.
Yay!
I don't see you have one for the next guy on our list either, so.
I don't.
That
I'm
could
sorry.
Be a cool one.
Oh, I don't know if he has art books.
He should. Makoto Shinkai is obviously, like, stellar in terms of his animation style. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful work. I'd say some of the stuff that he, gave to the animation world is things like the really bright color, or the really shiny colors and stuff like that, sort of sheen to all of his characters and all of his backgrounds, and the camera flare.
Yeah, the camera flare and the light.
You should have brought out the Nausicaa book.
Do you want me to go get that?
No, that's all right.
You sure?
I just noticed.
Moment's passed.
You didn't have one for Miyazaki, but
I know where it is.
You know where it is, but that's fine.
I could go grab it.
No, that's not necessary.
Moment's passed.
You're okay. About 20 minutes past Miyazaki.
But yeah, Makoto Shinkai. Anything to say on him, Chiaki?
No. I think you covered it. There you were good.
He's awesome.
So...
We covered him in a couple episodes ago, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have anyone else? Do you have anyone else?
Well, I'd say Satoshi Kon, but that's just because I love Satoshi Kon.
I could maybe see Satoshi Kon in, like, the very overly expressive faces to a point that would not anatomically work. Like, some of the scenes in Tokyo Godfathers where they're, like, their mouths are, like, this big.
And just, you know, under the whole idea of you see it and you just know that that's his. Because all of Satoshi Kon's stuff look very similar to his style.
Yeah.
Even when you go from something like Paprika, which is really phantasmical and everything, to Tokyo Godfathers, which is in, you know, besides the outlandish expressions, is very realistic. All of their, like, characterizations still look very similar to each other, so... But I love him.
God rest Satoshi Kon's soul.
All right, moving on from that.
All right. We are going to take a short anime news break now. I hope you learned something about art and artists.
I know I did.
Discovered a new artist that you might like. But we're going to flip through these anime art books as we take a break. And then when we come back, I'm going to be doing a review of Nichijou, or My Ordinary Life. And Mitsugi will be reviewing, we've already established I can't pronounce it.
Karigurashi no Arati.
Or The Borrower Arietti. So,
stay tuned.
We'll be back.
All you Sailor Scouts out there, this is Chiaki, and this is your first anime news break. First up, for you Final Fantasy fans, the game Final Fantasy Type-0 RPG will be getting a manga this November. Takatoshi Shiozawa will launch the manga adaptation of the role-playing game in the December issue on November 11th of Shonen Gangan magazine. So, if you're a Square Enix fan, this is something to keep your eye on. In other news, the North American distributor Funimation has announced that it will release Legend of the Legendary Heroes on both DVD and Blu-ray. It will include English dubbing and subtitles. If you need help making a decision if this is something that you should pick up or not, Mitsugi reviewed this anime back on episode 69. Moving on to some Ghibli news, the distribution company G-Kids, now I worry about anything that has kids in the title after four kids. But apparently they've signed a deal with Studio Ghibli to distribute 13 of the anime films that the studio has made from 1984 up to 2002. Now some of these films include Princess Mononoke, My Neighbor Totoro, Laputa, and Spirited Away, at least within North America. If you're going, wait, doesn't Disney hold the rights? Yes, Disney will still retain the home video rights to these same films, whereas G-Kids will hold the theatrical and non-theatrical distribution rights. So, basically, if it comes out on a DVD and you can buy it for your house, that's Disney. Anywhere else, sounds like it's going to be G-Kids. They're going to distribute the films with both English subtitles and dubbing. They've already made an announcement that they will screen Spirited Away and Castle in the Sky for their 10th and 25th respective anniversaries at the New York Film Festival, which will run from September 30th to October 16th. So, if you're around New York, this could be a great chance to see a classic film on a big screen. If you're interested in seeing the recently reviewed film Red Line, made by Studio Madhouse, reviewed in episode 98, and you live in or around the Toronto area, you may be in luck. The film Red Line will be shown at the 6th annual Toronto After Dark Film Festival. The event runs from October 20th to the 27th, and screenings will be held at the Toronto Underground Cinema. Redline is actually the only anime movies in the festival's initial 8-film lineup, so that should say something about this film. If you live around the area, once again, a great chance to see an anime on the big screen, and trust me, if you can, Redline is not one you want to miss. And finally, starting on October 15th on the satellite channel BS Fuji in Japan, a new Adlib anime is going to air. Yes, I did say Adlib. Headed by Imeri Kaoto and Kaori Fukuhara, the voice actress is best known for playing the Hidegai twins in Lucky Star, will be heading the project, and basically what they're going to do is they're going to go in and ad-lib a dialogue entirely from scratch, and then the animation will be made around it. So it has the potential to be really good, I think, or really bad, because just because you're an actor or actress doesn't mean you can ad-lib well. This was Chiaki, this was your anime news break. Stay tuned, and we will be back to the show.
You need to cry. Let's brainstorm. I could hit you over the head with a wrench, or I could stab you in the gut with the knife.
Knife wrench!
Practical and safe.
Are you tired of crappy ideas that don't work? So are we. So we invented 918 The Fan. 918 The Fan. Everything you want to hear, nothing you don't.
Knife wrench!
For kids.
アニメアディクトアノニモスはエイミープレックスとご覧のスポンサーの提供でお送りいたします。
And we are back once again.As always. And we just have two reviews for you tonight.
We always come back.
We always come back.
Eventually.
Always and forever.
Life is like the carnival. It always goes away, but if you wait long enough, it always comes back.
And it has overpriced food and rides called the zipper that will make you vomit.
And deep fried butter.
I thought you said deep throat butter for a second.
Hey, family, family episode here.
I'm talking about eating butter. A lot of it.
I was going to say that was the 1940s vaudeville? No, it was not vaudeville.
Uh-huh.
Deep throat?
That was the...
All right, moving on
from that. The guy who... wasn't it the guy in the
Phil
Kennedy
Noir.
Assassination?
No, Phil.
Went under the handle deep throat?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyways, I will be reviewing the anime Nichijou. And I will start. Nichijou, otherwise known as My Ordinary Life. Started airing of April this year. It is 24 episodes with some specials. No, I did not want the specials. You would have to pay me to do that. And it is of the genre of RCH.
Random
crap happens.
Happening. Random crap happening. All right.
Each episode is broken down into 1 to 5 vignettes. Generally like 3-ish. Sometimes more, sometimes less. And it's basically like Nichijou, session blah blah blah. And then it's like something happens that's completely random. If you're looking for a plot, I don't have anything to give you. It just follows characters in a normal school and stuff. And I really think that a quote from Jim Rome describes how I feel about this show.
Jim Rome.
Yes.
He's burning.
Yes. I get it. It's just not funny.
I need to find that quote from Jim Rome.
Because that's how I feel about this series. I get it. I get what it's trying to do. I get all the jokes that it makes. They're just not that funny. The whole premise of Nichijou relies on the random nature of its absurdities.
Well, I googled it, and all I found was Jim Rome is a douche and not even funny. So that's not quite close. I happen to like Jim Rome, but whatever.
Like, one moment they'll be in class, and the next moment as they're sitting in class, they'll pull out an AK-47 and start, like, shooting at each other. And then the next moment they're back in class again. Like, people will be randomly depicted with cat ears, like... There's a scientist who built a robot, and other odd tangents that serve, like, as extended jokes that were rampant through the series.
I just can't get over how much, like, the Azumanga characters they look like. One of them is an absolute twin of Asaka from Azumanga.
Yeah, like, they're really... It's like a bunch of other shows that try to be Azumanga, but really should just stop trying. And it's like, For example, they have a whole 30 seconds in one episode devoting to finding a gun in a book, and then they never mention it again. And it's like, I realize that these are like supposed to be jokes on like the serious nature of people and the childlike nature of people and like relationships and things like that. I get it. I get that it's supposed to be like humorous representations of these things.
Apparently not. Apparently you don't get it.
I do get it.
They're seeing something that you're not seeing. I wonder what it is.
I don't know. But like, I just didn't get any amusement out of it. And I realize humor is really subjective and maybe, Like everyone has a different perception of it, so it can be really hit or miss. But like, I was looking through other reviews and what other people said on the internet, because I'm thinking, okay, maybe I don't get it, and this is really, really funny, and everyone else loves it. And I was reading through a bunch of stuff, and everyone else, like 90% of the other reviewers and people who were talking about it that I read, were also like, I mean, someone finds it funny, right? I don't really get it, but I wasn't really laughing.
All right, people in the chat, Chiaki, keep going, but when she does review it, is it going to be over or under a 2? I'm predicting right now.
I sit here and I look at it and I go, the humor is not sophisticated, so it can't be some kind of sophisticated joke. I mean, it's not really sophisticated. It's borderline slapstick, but it's not that funny of slapstick. I think on a lot of notes it falls flat. That being said, one praise that I really can give it, and especially its creators, is that for all of its random spells, the creators did a really good job of shifting the art style and the character designs and the music in a way that fills the antics but still seems to go with the theme of the overall show. And it's not like as jarring of a shift that like Penny and Stocking was, you know, where like they'd automatically go from like this really cartoon-esque to like full-on anime when they became hookers. but like, it shifts often and the music shifts with it.
One thing I can say about Penny and Stockings is that it made some really hot cosplay.
Yeah, it did.
And thank you for that. God bless you.
So, I'm just saying, like, I can really appreciate that, and it did a really good job of that. And the animation in general was fantastic. It was like this pastel work that seemed very simple, but was yet very intricate in a lot of scenes at the same time. So it worked really well for what the series was trying to do, and it looked fantastic. So the look and the music of this series really saved it for me in a lot of points. I did chuckle at parts. I just think that it was way too long. I feel like this anime should have been like 12 episodes, or even better, a 6-episode OVA.
How did they keep it going for 26 episodes? That's what I want to know.
It got very bored.
It got bored, or you got bored? How does a show get bored? It's not even.
It got bored of itself.
It's not even an anime thing.
It was done by the same people who did Azumanga Yusuke, right? Because it looks just like it.
I don't think it was. I don't know. Maybe it was.
Researching.
Because it really does. Like, I haven't seen Azumanga.
It's the same. The art's the same.
Yeah.
The studio's the same. But I don't know if the director's the same.
Yeah.
I will research this for you while you talk.
Okay. Thank you. I just think it would have done a lot better as like 12 episodes or even like a 6-episode OVA or something, where they could have taken all of like the really good ones. Because like I said, I chuckled probably once or twice every 2 to 3 episodes. So they like had cut it down and took all those best parts and put them random instead of spreading them out with kind of like crap. I think it could have been a lot better, and it could have rivaled and been really good.
Yeah, I should have known this already. This is not, it's not the same director. It's the director that did Haruhi Suzumiya.
Oh. But I mean, it was very well animated and directed, I can say.
Yeah, well, no doubt it looked great. I was just following up for you guys.
So Soul Rogue says 26 10-minute episodes. That would have worked better than 24-minute episodes or whatever.
Well, you know, Azumanga was broken down into like 4-minute little storyboard things.
Oh, this was broken down in each episode.
So each episode was made up of like 5 tiny little episodes.
Yeah. And anywhere between like 2 to 5, I'd say. But what Z Comics is asking, what's appearing on the screen? That is Nichijou right now.
Yeah, you're watching Nichijou because we like to bring it to you firsthand.
Exactly. So I mean, overall, this anime wasn't the most god awful piece of shit that I've seen in a long time. It was a lot better than A Channel for a lot of reasons. The character was better, the animation was better. It was head and shoulders above A Channel. But I just feel like a lot of series need to kind of give up on this random stuff happening kind of genre, because I don't think it's really been done well since like Lucky Star and Azumanga. Those are like the only two that come to mind.
I hated Lucky Star.
Some
people love it. I don't know.
I hated it. I couldn't watch past the first episode.
I mean, I felt sick in my stomach immediately. As soon as they started doing their damn little dance, I just couldn't handle that.
Their damn little dance. I think that it's just gotten stale. I mean, the way that they do it, it's just like, oh, awesome. I could be watching something with a plot right now. Overall,
I just think as we get older, we want more serious content. And at some point, you know, random madness happening in your school is just not, you know.
Yeah.
And
I mean, maybe someone 5 years younger than me adores this series. Because
it's just not mature enough subject matter, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like they try to be mature sometimes in their jokes and have their representations of various things. But overall, I'm going to give it 2.5 people with wind-up screws coming out of their back out of 5. Because okay. I'd just say it qualifies as average. There's nothing astounding here. And what saves it, if it was just, like, if the animation and music were bad and it was slightly less amusing, it would easily be, like, a 1. But the fact that the animation is so good and the music is so good, and the fact that there is, like, some kind of, like, amusingness to it now and then, it's average. It won't change your life. If you really like this kind of random crap genre, then you'll love this. It's probably one of the better ones next to Azumanga. I'd put it up there in the top 10 of random crap shows. I generally avoid them, so my list might not be that sophisticated, but I think it is good for what it is. I just think what it is isn't very good from a critical standpoint. So, that is my review.
Wow, rip it a new one.
No, I didn't think I was too harsh.
I don't remember who said
it. No, it's fine. I would have been harsher.
I don't remember who said it, but somebody said that you should give it 2.5 non-Chios.
Oh, 2.5 non-Chios. Yes, that would also work, too.
Exciting.
Yep. So, that's my review. If you like random crap, watch the show. If you don't, watch Azumanga Daioh and leave it at that.
Wasn't there a windy uppy in your back thing in Azumanga too?
I don't ever remember that.
No? So.
I just saw it in Anime Hell. I've never seen Azumanga Daioh.
I didn't know
if that was Azumanga or
no, it's not. I think I've seen Azumanga enough times that I remember that. Granted, a lot of random shit does happen in that show. Like, I'll give you that. So, next anime. Infinitely Better.
Yes. Definitely.
Well, welcome to Ghibli. As I find a good spot to start the movie in the chat.
We should just call it Ghibli out of 5.
Grant, now, just to start, the video in the chat and on in the video you'll find on iTunes cannot even remotely come close to doing Kaigurashi no Arete any kind of justice. Because as you...
Oh, man, you picked the scene where the old lady's gonna hit that crow in the face with her shoe.
So... because this is a Ghibli film, and Miyazaki did the storyboard, and that should be enough. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's just as beautiful as all of the other Ghibli films. So, I'm sorry, but the non-HD thing in the chat really can't do it justice. But this movie was directed by Hidemasa Yonebayashi, and he's the new director that Ghibli just brought on board. He's been with Ghibli since 1996, but this is his first directorial debut. He's been involved with all the Ghibli anime since he came on board, but he's been in a lot of animation roles. He was the assistant animation director for Gato Senki. He was a key animator for Howl's Moving Castle. He was In between animation for My Neighbor the Yamadas.
So in the traditional Miyazaki belief, he worked his way up as an animator before being a director for a while.
Yes, exactly. If you think about it, if you go in the progression of time, and he was merely an in between animator for My Neighbor Totoro, but or My Neighbor the Yamadas rather, he was merely an in between animator for Princess Mononoke, but starting with Spirited Away, he was a key animator, you know. And then Howl's Moving Castle, he is a key animator, and now he has been giving his... And he was an assistant animation director for Gato Senki, and now he is a full director for Karigurashi no Areti. And I must say, he did a very good job with this movie. He also did the storyboard... I'm sorry, Miyazaki did the screenplay for this. Yonebayashi did the storyboard. And it's not an original work, as... Chiaki was telling me The Borrowers is a book series written by Mary Norton.
Is it a series or is it just one book?
Or one book, I don't know. Regardless, it's Mary Norton.
Yeah, it's one book. I think it's one book.
Didn't they come out with a movie?
And Disney did a live-action movie of The Borrowers.
Yeah, okay, I remember that.
Yeah, so it's not an original work, but damn, is it pretty.
Yeah.
Areti is a 14-year-old girl, and her family are borrowers, which are, like, little people. They're real little. Like, her head is exactly the size of a sugar cube, pretty much. And if you see the movie, you'll understand why that's relevant at all. But they go into the houses of the... They basically find a house where people like us live, and they go in and they steal things in the night that they need to live in their own house.
Well, they don't call it stealing, though. They call it borrowing.
All right, it's borrowing, but they're stealing it. You know, they go in, and they'll, like... You know, they need sugar, so they'll go in, and they have these cool little tools that they can use, throw, like, their grappling hook up onto, like, edge of a table, and climb up the rope onto the table.
And, of course, their grappling hook is, like, made of, like, earring, like, posts and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, paperclip.
Like, they put, like, flypaper on their shoes and their hands, and because they're so small and light, they can literally, like, walk up walls with flypaper and stuff. So it's really neat watching them kind of infiltrate this house in the night.
I totes remember this.
And, so the inside of their houses are loaded with things that you'd find in a household. Like I recall a chess piece of like a knight near the doorway, and pretty much everything in their house is some kind of object that you'd find in a human's house. And the inside of their house is very nice. Granted, it's only like the size of a shoebox, right?
Yeah.
So where do I go from here? Areti is spotted one day walking outside in the yard or something. By the boy that lives in the house, his name's Sho.
And he just moved in.
He's sick. He has a heart condition. So that's kind of the overview for the show.
Okay.
And that's important because Sho goes through quite the transition of his own as a character and as a personality throughout the course of the show. And because he originally meets Areti as she is sneaking into the house with her father to steal sugar, and I believe they want a tissue or something. Because a tissue is like, oh, that's like enough supplies for a year for these people.
Yeah.
You know, and he's actually sleeping right by the tissue box as they're trying to steal it. They didn't realize that. And he's like, he talks to her, and, this is like a no-no for the borrowers. Because people are always trying to capture them and, like, torture them. And because they're like these little people. It's like catching a living fairy inside your house.
Yeah.
So you're going to be like... WTF, let's call the newspaper and capture this thing in a jar, right? So when you're spotted, you're basically gonna have to move to another house, and that's what happens. They're spotted and they know immediately that they need to move because they've been discovered, right?
Right.
But Sho is this boy who's sick, and really what he wants to do is he just wants to kind of make a friend, I think. So he finds the sugar cube that she drops out of her bag because she's startled while they're escaping. And not that he's trying to capture her, but they don't know that. And he leaves the sugar cube outside by this little grate that leads into their house where he sees her coming in and out, I guess. You know, with a note that says,
you forgot.
You know, wasureta or something, you forgot this. I think that's what it says. And as a gesture of peace, I think, you know.
But of course, they interpret it as a trap.
Yeah.
The antagonists in the movie, I think, are defined pretty well. it's clearly the grandmother or the aunt that lives in the house that just wants to kind of capture them. She's very creepy and she wants to capture them. And also just the general situation that they live in, because, you know, she's a borrower and that's kind of a rough life all in itself. But then he's has his own personal problems because he's sick and he's going to have surgery like in 2 days on his heart. So the antagonists are really the aunt and then their personal situations. But what's interesting about the movie, I think, is how they kind of help each other in a way. And I think she helps him more than he helps her, probably. But, you know, kind of it's in a very spirited away-esque manner, find the strength to, you know, go through your life's tribulations or whatever, I guess. I don't know, do you think I'm on track with that?
Yeah, I would say so.
You know, at the end of the movie, not to throw out too many spoilers, but I just wanted to say a quote that he says. Mm-hmm. At the end of the movie, he says, you know, my operation will be fine. You, Aretti, are a part of me forever now. You've given me the strength to live on. Because he's kind of given up, I think, you know, when you first see him compared to the end of the movie where he wants to live.
And I feel like part of it comes in that he talks about, and this is my personal interpretation, he talks about how he can't run and play like the other kids could.
And they show that.
And they show that, and he can't do a bunch of things. So I think, in a way, I feel like what they were going for is he lives in this world of you can't and I can't. And I think he saw Arietti and the other borrowers as being something that he could do. Just by virtue of how much larger he was than them, he could help them by a simple gesture of giving them a sugar cube. And I think that was empowering for him,
and
because
I think,
he was useful.
And I think you're onto something there, because I think while he's living in this world of can't and cannot and helplessness, he's looking at these little people who are, like, literally tiny. You know, she's probably 3 inches tall.
Yeah.
And they're, despite their clear disadvantage in life, doing their best to make it through, you know, and that kind of is a motivation for him. And this is all undertones, because of course this isn't spoken, but you have to look between the lines when you're watching a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
The execution of the movie, I thought, was very, it was interesting. It's not an explosive film. Like, you're not going to get extreme scenes of action. One of the most action-packed scenes in the movie was when a crow tries to eat Aretti while she's on top of the house, and it misses and jams its head through a screen window where Sho is in the room sleeping. That's actually like an action-packed scene for this movie.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's not really about the action. The pacing's not poor, but it maintains what I would call like a mellow tone throughout.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really have ups and downs, but it maintains like a steadiness. But don't expect action scenes and high drama from the movie, because it doesn't have a lot of drama or action. It's definitely a fantasy movie. But moving on from that, it's not quite as fantasy as Redline, which was supposed to be, you know, rooted in a world that was believable, which of course it's not. I'd say this is more believable because everybody has, like, the socks that go missing from their house, or I lost my damned car keys, things you lose you never find.
Or you put a pencil down and then the next morning it's not there and you're like, I know I put it here.
Well, there's probably a borrower living under your house, and so this movie is more believable than Redline. And I will draw a couple comparisons to the Red Line, because I just reviewed that last week. But I felt that there was a love theme in this movie to some extent. And Chiaki, you can correct me if you don't agree, but
I see it more of admiration than love between them. Just because I think they both realized that it would never work between them. But
platonic
they
love?
Yeah, like kind of the, if I wasn't 3 inches tall and you weren't 5 feet tall, there might be something between us, but there isn't, so know that I have deeper feelings than just friendship for you, but know that it's not more, so yeah.
Well, plus, if Aretti was, like, taller, she's a very attractive character.
Yeah.
I mean, no doubt, go look her up. Actually, you'll probably see her in the video, or you probably already have. You know, she's the tiny little redheaded girl, but in Redline, I thought the love story felt very rushed and artificial, because there was no background to it, you know? But in this movie, there's no more background than in Redline, but for some reason, it just felt more believable, even though she's 3 inches tall and it clearly can't work, because I just think that Ghibli did a better job. It's clearly better directing. Yone Bayashi, he did a better job of directing his film than the directing job that was done in Redline, and so I feel like the love story is just, I bought it more, you know?
Yeah.
It's not that this movie was longer, or they spent time, they had some, like, adventure together where they bonded, you know? If anything, their relationship in this movie's taboo, you know, compared to Redline, but I just really bought, I really bought the relationship, and...
You wanted that relationship to happen.
I wanted it to happen.
Because you were asking me, you're like, is this a love story? Is it a love story in here? They love each other. I'm like, I don't, I mean...
They do. I think at the end of this movie, it's clear that there's something going on there, and, you know, I just think it was a fantastic job of directing that they managed to get that through in a way that, in a way that... I know in the TV movie or whatever of the borrowers, they do the cheap, like, you know, they make it work because, like, the kiss makes her full size or whatever.
Well, I don't know if that was the TV movie or something that I just read somewhere.
Whatever, you said it was from something, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like I heard some kind of variation on the borrowers where it was, like, a curse on, like, some group of people that made them little, and then they copped out.
True,
like,
love's kiss,
true love's
made
kiss
her
made her normal size again. And then,
you know,
they ride off into the sunset.
I think it was clear they didn't want to go down that road with this movie because
not
that's not
out.
That doesn't happen. But you know, it's not, they're not going to Deus Ex the movie to hell.
Yeah.
You know, which is a very good video game, by the way, Deus Ex. You know, as a side note. But I just, they didn't really want to go into it that, they didn't really want to go into the love story that much. It couldn't happen, and because it can't happen, they're not going to like obsess over it and then forget about it like a lot of anime would.
So we do like that they presented, and he's on screen right now, a kind of alternate love story between her and Spiller, who's, or Spiler, or however you say it.
Spiller was cool, but I don't buy Spiller. You know, the love story was clearly there for show and
she was interested
and
in Spiller.
Oddity. She was not.
She
was,
oh my god, to see where he walks in, she's like, borrower and it's a dude.
Yeah, because she thinks she's the only, she thinks her and her family are the only borrowers on Earth, and she's never seen another borrower. Of course she's gonna want, like, be curious, you know?
Okay, well,
but
I think
verbatim the original one.
But,
yeah.
But I'll tell you, but I'll tell you that she crawls up onto the roof of the house to see Sho, and that's a lot of effort, because that, think about it, she's 3 inches tall, so a two-story building is like a friggin' mountain. You're like climbing Mount Everest. She climbs Mount Everest to see Sho, okay? So... Yeah, but the directing job was very, very good. I really did enjoy it. I thought that Arete was a very positive presence in the film. She's kind of always helping people, adventuring. She's an overall fun character. But I thought that, you know, she's mature and she understood the situation that her family was in, having to move. And so, you know, she, and she also admitted that it was mostly her fault that they had to, because she's the one that got spotted. And
she did so not in a whiny way.
Right,
not
she just
like
kind of accepts
I hate
it,
myself.
And it's a taboo relationship. You broke the taboo, and now your family has to move. And it's obviously hard because, I mean, it's like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. It takes 6 million days to get across the lawn of this house,
yeah.
And on the way you're getting eaten by ants and all kinds of scorpions and things like that. That doesn't happen in this movie, but everybody's seen the original Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So, you know, when there's like a tanuki badger walking past you. It's like the size of a friggin' blue whale to us.
Yeah.
And that thing just wants to eat you. And not to mention the owls that are up in the trees. Oh.
Or that crow?
The crow tries to eat her in the daylight, but an owl is like your owl food out there in the grass. So it's... I'm diverging from the topic, but it's a hard tribulation having to move your house, and she kind of accepts that. As far as the music... In the animation.
Oh, I love the music.
I've been
still Joe Hisaishi?
No.
It's not Joe Hisaishi.
It's awesome.
Really?
It's almost like a Celtic-y kind of flair to it.
Ooh.
You should download it all.
The music is done by Cecile Corbell.
A woman.
A woman. And not a Japanese woman, it would seem. But the music is very nice. I've been playing it the whole time. It is kind of a cross between Celtic folk music, maybe a little bit of rock.
Yeah.
A little bit more Celtic than rock, but kind of, you know, acoustic guitar and stuff like that. But it fit the mood of the show very well, of the movie very well. And of course, the animation is glorious. Literally, it's just glorious. I mean, watching in the chat, even though it doesn't even come close to what it would look like on a 50-inch plasma, you know, in 1080p, it's you can tell that it's a beautiful movie just watching it. Much like Redline was beautiful. But
just different kinds of beautiful.
It's Ghibli, so what the hell do you expect, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, if you don't expect beauty out of the movie, then you obviously haven't seen any other Ghibli films, and you should go watch them right now and not listen
all
to this
them.
Podcast anymore. All of them, yes.
At the same time. One right after another.
Including Ocean Waves and the other non-Ghibli, Miyazaki movies. What was that?
There's one called, like, Yesterday.
Something? Only Yesterday?
Only Yesterday.
That one's also not Miyazaki, but you should watch that one, too. I don't know. What else to say? I don't want to spoil the ending or anything like that. I think I've been pretty good about not spoiling things.
I have
things.
A question.
Question, okay.
You said that the movie's got kind of like a mellow, sort of straight line feel to it in terms of event. Does it still have like a conflict and an overall like climax and resolution to it? Or is it just kind of like a slice of life only with small people?
I'd say they do have the exterminators, for anyone familiar with the Borrower series. They do bring in the exterminators, and I think that serves as, like, the kind of excitement. But I think the overall conflict, as Mitsugi mentioned before, is more about the people and their situations. So even though they have, like, the superficial conflict that, like, has kind of the exciting, the overall conflict is much more subtle. But it's
okay.
There is conflict happening, you know, I'll say 70% of the way through the movie. But it isn't like there's a moment of peril where they're getting ready to die and there's like you know, I don't know, D.A.C. Ray type, you know, to quote, to you know, talk about the Mozart Requiem. There's nothing like, no fiery, like, music and exciting scene like that.
Gotcha.
But there is a conflict at the end that is overcome, and it's a sad movie, though. I definitely thought the movie was sad, and you know, in a way, the conflict that never...
I thought it was realistically sad.
It is, because what would be unreal... Well, I don't want to spoil the end, but, you know, I thought that the conflict was overcome in that everybody's safe, but the conflict was not overcome in that they still have to move.
Yeah.
So, and that's why the movie's sad. But, you know. You want to do a joint rating of the movie?
Sure.
I'm trying to think. It's so easy. I'm gonna give it 5 bobby pins out of 5, because the first thing she takes from the house as a borrower is like this bobby pin that she keeps like through her dress, and it's like almost like a sword, because it's basically like the size of a sword to her, and she uses it to do various things throughout the movie. You know, it's kind of like the stick from Ico.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The game.
I'd have to say...
Is this going
to
be the first time ever that you give an anime a lower score than me?
I think so.
You don't think this movie is worth a 5? You cannot give it a 5. It's not going to get a 4, so it's going to get a 5 regardless, but...
I know. On the standard anime scale, it gets a 5. On a Ghibli scale, I give it a 4.5. Just because...
I'm not putting this on the Ghibli scale. It's not a Miyazaki movie. It's not a Takahata movie.
Well, let me just talk myself out.
Okay.
On a standard scale, I would give it, or on a Ghibli scale, I give it a 4.5. And my reasoning being is, it's not original. I mean, I know it's fantastically presented in a really well-done way. In fact, I think it's even a better remake of a story than Howl's movie Castle was, by An Arm and a Leg. But I don't know, I feel bad giving something a 5 that isn't original. That being said, if we're going by a regular anime scale, I will give it a 5, because...
Think about all the crap that's come out, like, in the last 2 years. I think 50% of anime is like Nichijou or worse, you know? And compared to that, this movie is like a light shining down from heaven, you know? It's just that much better than the rest of the animes out there, even though it is a film, so maybe that's not fair.
Yeah.
But, what was your score?
I'll give it a 5.
I talked you into it?
Whatever. 5 sugar cubes out of 5. It can't hurt.
I mean, when you think about it in comparison to the Ghibli films, it's, you know, it still looks like it would be good.
Oh, it's
not,
it's up
Earthsea.
No, it's definitely up there. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm just saying, if you put, like, this compared to, like, Mononoke.
It wasn't just his lack of originality, though, right? Because Howl's wasn't original either.
As I said, I think this does a better job than Howl's. I still probably wouldn't give Howl's a 5.
I thought this movie was better than Howl's Moving Castle.
I thought it was, too.
It doesn't... House Moving Castle is this, is like I said before, it's this movie that had three times as much content in it that they could show you, because they could have had a whole five episode just on the war.
Yeah.
But the war is kind of like an undertone. Whereas this movie was very simple. Because it was simple, they could do everything perfectly, and there were no loose ends. There was nothing left out.
Mm-hmm.
It was just very... It was a simple movie, and it fit perfectly in the, you know, 1 hour and 40 minutes that it was. So...
Yeah, it was good. It's worth a watch.
It's not as beautiful as House Moving Castle.
Well, House was just, like, but, above and beyond in terms of detail and BC.
Spiral 3D is asking if there's a sub or a dub for it yet.
There is a subtitle for it. There's no dub yet.
I'm sure John Lasseter is going to try to get his hands on this one
Disney,
ASAP.
Disney has all the home video rights to Ghibli. If it's coming over, it's coming over through Disney. And John Lasseter will make a personal trip to Japan and be like, Miyazaki, can I take you out for coffee? No? Okay, I'll fly over a different time.
Right now, before we close it out, they're having a scene in the video where Adachi is literally standing behind Sho, and he turns around and sees her for the very first time. And here it is. The cat that's there wants to eat her because
bad.
The cat's like Cornelius, you know. She's basically a mouse to that cat, but you know, he sees her and the first thing he does is tell her how beautiful she is. So there you go. Right there is a good indication of how he feels about her. I don't think I have the subtitles on, but he does say, you
know.
Wait,
this is the first time he's ever seen her?
He sees her, like, shifting through the grass and the yard.
Or, like, shadows of her.
Or, like, yeah, sneaking around the house trying to steal tissues and stuff. But this is the first time, and this is, like, obviously taboo, because you're not supposed to, like, talk to people or see them or anything. But.
Right.
It's good.
So this is a very important scene in the movie.
I will.
So, it's a great movie. It's short. Everybody should see this movie.
Yeah.
It has enough love, enough action, enough intrigue in it that I think anybody would like this film. I don't know who would not like it. Really, it'd be
people
tough.
People who only like big tits and explosions.
If you want,
that's all.
That's
they
it.
Like.
You, if you thought that's all you like are big tits and explosions, you probably won't like this movie. But
Adachi, if you have a soul,
Adachi is cute enough that it will appeal to most guys just for that. But very good film.
All right.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
I liked it.
And I think I'm going to keep doing movies. There's several other movies I wanted to watch, so I'm going to try to do maybe one a week until we hit the new season.
Okay.
Which is when the old anime from the summer will be finished. And we'll probably have to cover the new anime for the fall pretty soon, but I think we're all pretty excited about that because there's some good stuff coming out in the fall.
Yeah, we've already started talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know what my top five are already. I don't even have to think about it. So, of course.
Well, let's save that for later, Mitsuki.
Of course.
We'll save it for later.
Of course.
As always, you can find us at AAApodcast.com. iTunes, drop us a rating, helps us out. Facebook, facebook.com/AnimeAddictsAnonymousPodcast. You can like the show and get updates whenever new blog posts come out. We're doing an episode. Become a friend of, like our page and become a friend of us on Facebook, and you'll never miss an announcement. AAAnetwork.org, great place to find shows. And broadcasting live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. EST, ustream.tv/channel/anime-addicts-anonymous-podcast. But all of these links are found on our main site, so just go to aapodcast.com. That's the easiest. And speaking of the Ustream, thank you to those of you who joined us on the Ustream.
You are lovely, lovely people.
It was fantastic to have you. And taking us out of this episode 99 tonight will be Hi 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 from the anime Usagi Drop by the artist Kasa Rinchu. So, have a great night, everyone.
Be safe.
Good night, all.
See you next week.